news, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5 at 8.07 on Mobile Mornings. This morning happens to be a Tuesday morning.
It does. And on the line with us, Quinn Hillier. You can read his work at his website, quinnhillier.com, but he also writes in Louisiana for The Advocate and NOLA.com. Hey, Quinn, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
Did you have a good 4th? Good 4th of July
was wonderful, and the 4th of July is just a fantastic holiday in general, and every American should be happy, proud, and grateful to be an American.
Well, if you get the right information and education growing up, I mean, America's not perfect, we get that, but there are so many remarkable things in the making of this country and the fortification of it and the deeds of this nation in its history. You'd be hard-pressed not to be feeling the way you do and the way and the way Dalton does.
If you have any sense of context, any sense of history, and any discernment, you should be grateful that you have been blessed to be born in this country. And now we are less than 1 year away from the semi-quincentennial, the 250th anniversary of the founding of the country with the Declaration of Independence, and we need to make it a very big and very joyful celebration.
That's because it's the semi-quincentennial.
Even better would be a full quin, but a semi-quin, I guess, is pretty good.
Let's talk about about that bill that was signed on Friday, the one big, beautiful bill. It came through. I mean, Trump, early last week said, I don't see how they're going to get this across. But they did. He signed it. And the left, of course, continued to take aim at what they say this bill will result in. And according to them, major loss of benefits to a ton of people and loss of life. And, you know, they go on and on with the scare tactics. But Medicaid here is a big part of this bill, and the left trying to say that it'll take, I've seen some say 12 million out of Medicaid. Newsom said 15 million. J.D. Crow going after Katie Britt in his latest cartoon for the Medicaid cuts. What are your thoughts on all this, Quinn?
Okay, first of all, just on the bill itself, look, I think it's a mixed bag. I'd say it's like 53% good and 47% bad provisions. But the scare tactics the left used on Medicaid are ridiculous. They are demagogic. They are inexcusable. Yes, you can criticize at the margins what Republicans are doing on Medicaid. You can say that they haven't thought through exactly how the process will work, but the scare tactics that, you know, you're going to have people, you know, dying in, you know, thousands of people dying because of this, it's absurd, and the reasons that they give are absurd, and I can go into the details, but let me just say this. The claims of how many people will be thrown off are probably way overblown. But then again, that also means that the savings Republicans are claiming from the Medicaid changes are probably overstated, which means the bill is going to add even more to the deficit and debt than we already think it will. So even defending Republicans on Medicaid, you've got to acknowledge that they're part of their problem is they claimed that the Medicaid changes would give them a lot more savings than they'll probably get. But still, not getting as much savings is a lot less bad than overstating the devastation and the loss of life and bad health care and all that stuff is not going to happen. The Democrats are basically lying about it.
So a big part of this are the work requirements, right? And they include volunteering, and there's several things that fit into that category of how much you need to be, if you're able-bodied, doing in order to pick up the benefits like Medicaid and food stamps.
80 hours a month?
I think it might have been around there. Many states, especially Republican states like Alabama, already have some work requirements in place for that. These very far left states, the way I understand it, and I don't live there, so I don't know for a fact, but they have very lenient rules on a lot of these entitlements, and that's where a lot of the waste seems to be coming from.
Well, you make good points all across it. Look, on work requirements, when Republicans passed welfare reform in 1996, Bill Clinton vetoed it twice, but then when he finally was forced to sign the third one, it had much more stringent work requirements for welfare than this does for Medicaid. And Clinton and Gore spent the next 15 years bragging about welfare reform, even though they didn't do it. Republicans did it. But they were bragging about it, and part of what they were bragging about was that the work requirements actually worked as intended to help get people back on their feet. And so now that we're putting much less stringent work requirements on Medicaid, the left is somehow saying, oh, no, this is just awful. It's mean. They're saying what's mean is nicer than what Clinton was bragging about. These are not stringent work requirements, and they don't even apply to enough people. They exempt you if you're disabled. They exempt you if you have a child under 15 years old at home, so you're not subject to the work requirements then. They exempt you if you're a Native American. They exempt you if you make less than 100% of the official poverty line, and on and on and on. So they only apply to people that are between 100 and 139% of the poverty line if they're childless or if they don't have children below 15 years old. And if they don't meet any of these other requirements. So how can that be too much to ask? They literally only apply to able-bodied adults that could be working that aren't.
And, you know, some of these sob stories, and some of them are incredibly sad, and I think for reasons other than the way they're portrayed online sometimes, but I don't know if the Democrats are putting a lot of these people up to it or if they're just grabbing a phone and putting it in front of their face, but I've seen several videos with entire families not working and receiving, you know, they live through these entitlements, and they're not putting anything back into the economy. And you think, well, it's fine if you're talking about two people who can't get out of bed, like the grandparents and Charlie in the chocolate factory, or Willy Wonka in the chocolate factory. But there's a lot of people where I'm saying, hey, you could be out there doing something. And somehow we've put ourselves in the position where there are vast swaths of people who literally don't do anything all day.
They are. In fact, there's a study. Wall Street Journal noted this. It's not by some right-wing outfit, but some tremendously respected outfit like the Pew Research Center or one of those that say that there are a very large number of young men, like ages 20 to 35, who spend more than 4 hours a day playing video games, who do not work, who are not taking classes, who are not volunteering, and who are on Medicaid. And this is an economy right now where a lot of employers are having trouble finding workers. It's not like, this is a no-job economy. This is an economy where there are jobs to be had, and there, I don't want to overstate, it's not like there are 20 million of these people, but there are literally a few million people that this applies to who are basically just being lazy. And that is the God's honest truth, and it's not coming from some crazy right-wing site. Go to the Wall Street Journal story, Google something along the lines of what I described. It was about a week ago.
So Democrats, they organize their talking points or their lies or their exaggerations about things. And they just beat the drum and beat the drum over and over again, say the same things, all saying the same thing over and over again. It's all amplified by NBC and ABC and CBS and PBS and CNN, New York Times, AL.com. I mean, they forever have had this advantage to get whatever point they're trying to make, valid or not, out there.
Yeah, and they would have more credibility if they would stick to the facts and not exaggerate everything. I mean, you know, I try anytime I'm talking, you know, you hear me and a lot of your listeners say, well, I hem and I'm not hemming and I'm hawing. I'm actually saying that there is some context and some nuance here. But if they didn't overstate their case, you might listen to some of what they're saying. Instead, they just yell with these terrible scare tactics that are so exaggerated that they're, you know, 99% lies. And so they have no credibility, even if the 1% that they're talking about is true.
Yeah, I mean, it's divisive, though. The bottom line is, yeah, Trump won, Republicans won. You know, you can talk about, okay, they dominated, but the fact is still about 50% of the nation voted for Kamala Harris. And I think a lot of that's got to do with what we just talked about. They say whatever they want to say to make their point, be it a lie or not, they don't care.
They don't care. And look, it works both ways. There are a lot sure. of lies coming from the right these days. But if people would stop the demagoguery and the exaggerations and the outright lies, you know, then both sides might be able to at least listen to each other and, you know, say, well, maybe we can tweak this to make this better. But when you're lying about everything, the other side doesn't even want to say, well, maybe they've got a point on this little subset of things because they're so busy defending themselves against the lies.
How long has this been the case?
Well, I mean, look, this is a lot of this is how politics has always been, but it really has gotten worse in the last 25 years in the internet age. And I mean, look, I keep talking about this, when I was working in Congress 30 years ago, it was certainly, you know, no child's play then, and people, you know, there was a lot of anger on both sides. But you could also have friendships on the other side, and you at least would listen respectfully to the other side as long as they lived up to their word and as long as they didn't go out and lie about you. And that's not the case anymore.
One last little part, separate from what we've been discussing in this bill, but as we talk about, I saw one state, and it may have been a Wall Street Journal article, we're basically just handing out licenses left and right to illegal immigrants just to get them on the books, even if they couldn't drive. And when we talk about the census and how political seats are appropriated to different places, part of this bill, they're going to have the Treasury Department kind of separately from the census takers, but also kind of intertwined, get more demographic data at the level of house to house. And I know a big hope for many Republicans is that the census accurately reflects, you know, legal Americans and where they live and how they vote. But if that were to happen, that would create a pretty major change in how the House and Senate currently, or how the House looks.
It could, which is why you have sort of political fights over the census every 10 years about how to actually do the count and who to count. And you're absolutely right there. I think, you know, it could actually mean a difference of like 5 or 6 House seats, mm-hmm. maybe 6 or 7. And of course, you know, right now when you only have a 3-seat majority, those 5 or 6 could make a huge difference.
After the break, Quint, we'll turn our attention to the awful flooding in Texas, the loss of life, and some of the media coverage of that as well. Sound good?
Okay, thanks. Yes, indeed.
All right, Dio. 821.
Yeah, we'll be back. More Quinn Hillier. Also, keep those texts coming. 251-343-0106. Back in a minute.
Good morning. morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. It is 8:25 on Mobile Mornings. We had some crazy flooding yesterday right here in Mobile. A lot of you not aware of it because it only happened in one specific area.
Yeah, University South picked up quite a bit of rain, but really it was Greelot and all down Greelot. I think right at Greelot and Hillcrest, around 4 inches of rain. Had to rescue a car out there by Benja's tie, and it got pretty wild out there for a second. But like you said, other places didn't get a drop.
Yeah, that's how flash floods seem to operate. And, of course, what happened in Texas is so heartbreaking. Quinn Hillier with QuinnHillier.com. I think the death toll now, Quinn, is over 100, 104.
It's terrible, and there are several Alabama connections and people that I know people that died. It's horrible. Here's what really bothers me is the immediate political blame game, and it went as high as, like, George Stephanopoulos. Look, I think listeners know I'm no fan of the Trump administration in a lot of ways, but the immediate rush to blame the Trump administration for this is just sickening. Look, the Trump administration is wrong to overly cut and not carefully cut the National Weather Service, National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, and FEMA, for that matter. But none of that had anything to do with what happened in Texas. The warnings went out. The National Weather Service had twice as many people on duty as usually are on duty there. So they didn't miss the forecast. They didn't fail to get the word out. And to try to blame the Trump administration's upcoming cuts for what happened in Texas is wrong. It's a lie. It's vicious. And it totally detracts from what the real story is, which is the tragedy and the loss of life and the horrible things that these families are dealing with. We do not need to politicize it, especially when the politicizing is dishonest.
And I think probably the most disgusting form of politicizing this are not necessarily, and I think Schumer came out and said something similar, and several high-profile politicians, but really look at the ground level of activism from the left, and they were almost like berating the people who had children there or who were on the Guadalupe and saying, look, this is what you voted for. It's just difficult for me to know that there's people like that living here.
There's plenty of time to go back and figure out, well, could we have done other things to have a better warning system? I mean, look, this is an area without much cell coverage, and so the warnings that go to cell phones don't work if the cell phones don't have towers. But that's not what these people are doing. These leftist critics are acting as if, because Texas tends to vote for Republicans, that Texas deserves this. And that's not just wrong. It's sick and it's sickening and it's just short of demonic. Come on, people.
Especially when you consider that Camp Mystic and all those young, innocent little girls, 8 to 9, 8, 9. It's just... To take this and act in that way in the midst of all of this.
In the midst.
Oh.
There's plenty of time to go back and figure if other things could have and should have been done in terms of policy and in terms of, different warning systems or whatever. But don't play politics with this. Please, please, please. Quinn, have some heart, people.
Let everybody know where they can read your stuff, Quinn.
You can go to QuinnHillier.com or just Google Quinn Hillier and NOLA, NOLA.com.
Thanks for your time.
Guys. Appreciate it.
You got it.
All right. Quinn is gone. Now it's just us. 251-343-0106. Plenty of text to get to as Mobile Mornings will return right after the news.
First question on the flooding in Texas. Sure. I know there has been some concern about the timing of the alerts, knowing that they did go out, but the warnings coming out in the wee hours, so while many people were likely sleeping. Can you share just details what you know about why those warnings were sent while people were likely sleeping, and then what the administration is doing to ensure that these alerts come out sooner?
Well, the alerts imminently were sent out before the flood when people were sleeping because the flood hit in the very early hours of the morning. So people were sleeping in the middle of the night when this flood came. That was an act of God. It's not the administration's fault that the flood hit when it did. But there were early inconsistent warnings. And again, the National Weather Service did its job. On July 2nd, there were initial notices of potential weather and flooding risks were issued. On July 3rd, escalating warnings throughout the day with a flood watch issued at 1:18 p.m. And then later on at 6:10 p.m. on July 3rd, the Weather Prediction Center warned of excessive rainfall and a high likelihood of flash flooding. 6:22 p.m. July 3rd, National Weather Center issued a hydraulic warning highlighting considerable flooding risks, including in Caribou County. And then there were the timely flash flood alerts at 11:41 p.m., 1:14 a.m., and then another flash flood emergency warning issued at 4:03 a.m. just before the flood hit. So those were all of the warnings that went out to the affected area and region.
There you go, Caroline. Levitt taking the question, which I guess is not a ridiculous question, but in a way it feels like it, because these warnings come down systematically. Warnings, watches, warnings, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's got to do with the conditions at the moment, and that's when you hear our show get broken into by the National Weather Service. Mr. Robot tells you the areas that are going to be impacted. So that's, and they even did in the forecast, I guess what I'm reading is that they were saying the day before, like when people went to bed that night, they knew there was the chance of something happening. If this is amazing, because I had no idea that even happened in West Mobile yesterday, this 4 inches. So Don walks in this morning and says, it was bad in West Mobile. I said, yeah, I was aware of the thunder shower that popped up in the middle of the afternoon. And you were like saying, it might have been as many as 4 inches. I'm thinking, that sounds a little
ridiculous.
A little steep to me. I would have heard something about it.
Yeah.
As it turned out,
and not
was.
Just that it rained 4 inches, but that it happened over about 90 minutes.
And so if a death had occurred in West Mobile, thank God that's not the case, would everyone be pointing at the National Weather Service now? Like, why weren't they doing their job? I mean, some things happen. Sometimes mm-hmm. thunderstorms don't move. There's your cause, the cause and effect. And as tragic as all this is, it's an act of God. I mean, what can you do beyond what they did?
Well, yeah, and there are things that can be done, right? And there always has to be someone to blame. We know that about any story in America. You have to blame somebody.
Scapegoat.
And a pretty heavy portion of America, they'll just wait until someone gives them someone to blame, then they'll blame them, and then they won't look any further into it. And the easy one to blame is obviously the Fed, the federal government, because of these cuts. And they say, obviously, what was that? And Sean and I used to talk about the site, what was it, Spurious Correlations, where just because one thing is happening and another thing happens at the same time doesn't necessarily mean that they're linked.
Yeah.
Now, there are and have been cuts to many of the things, like we were wondering about hurricane season. And they were talking about taking a satellite offline because of its age and because the federal government said there are other ways they can kind of take the job that this satellite was doing and continue that job even if it's taken out of action. So everyone said, well, that first hurricane, as soon as that hits, we'll know who to blame. We'll blame them for taking the satellite out of the of the sky. And they ended up keeping it running. They're going to keep it running through the end of this month and then take it out of commission. But they're obviously the easy ones to blame. I think there's several things. Like, I don't take every warning or watch seriously that comes across my phone or comes across the radio, even though I should. And we don't have...
None of us do.
Now, on the phone, unless you have it set up a specific way, you can get every single alert that comes out.
Right.
Your phone will not stop buzzing.
Yeah.
Remember, at one point, I was signed up because I wanted to know what was going on around our entire region. So I was set up on my phone to get alerts from Dauphin Island, Gulf Shores in Orange Beach, Northern Baldwin County, Northern Mobile County, and everything in between. And my phone, I had to turn it off because... I was getting rip current warnings every other second. I was getting thunderstorm warnings every so often. It was just too much. So
the notifications are out there.
The notifications are out there, but how seriously do you take them? A lot of people are saying, well, you know, if you get a flash flood warning and one place gets a couple inches of rain in 30 minutes, that shouldn't be the same exact warning as a river that could overflow by 25 feet. And that there needs to be some kind of separation in those kinds of warnings. I did see this. New York Post had, and I was thinking about this with the federal government, I think rightfully trying to put a lot of responsibility back to the states, whether it's for, you know, what the job that FEMA does or whatever you have that they want to give the states more control over.
And by the way, I was with a friend over the weekend, waterfront, Baldwin County, concerned about FEMA, concerned about what he's hearing about FEMA, what he's reading about it. Is Trump, is the Trump administration and the federal authorities, because he lives in an area where it's not robust in population or resources. So he was like saying, we would need FEMA. We definitely would need FEMA being where he is.
And yeah.
He's concerned about that.
Anyway, there was a, I forgot where I was going there, but so Kerr County officials, and this came out yesterday, they were talking about putting putting power back to the states. You have to have state officials. This is where I was going. You have to have state officials who are up to that task.
Yeah.
And I bet a lot of you don't think that Alabama's up to that task with what we've seen from the state legislature year after year. But in this case in Texas, Kerr County officials were talking about putting a flood warning system along the Guadalupe.
Okay.
They wanted to put sirens and have those alongside the gauges to see how high the river had risen or would rise. And they have those gauges there, but they didn't put this siren system in place in Flash Flood Valley.
It's like 10 years ago they considered that?
Yeah, about 2017. And they had applied for a $1 million grant that they did not receive. So we're just talking about $1 million here in Texas, which there are players on probably Texas high schools, but definitely Texas college teams that are making more than $1 million for playing some college football. So $1 million grant they didn't get, and the taxpayers didn't want to fund it. They didn't want to put money in towards this into the system that would put sirens all the way down the river. And instead, they wanted to continue to use or decided to continue to use the word of mouth system. And as it, you know, starts from the top and works its way down, let people know all the way down the line what could be coming, which is an issue when the rain is coming at 2 a.m., 3 a.m., 4 a.m. in the morning.
Exactly.
County Judge Rob Kelly said taxpayers resisted the expense. Former Commissioner Tom Moser, who once championed the system, now says it just didn't happen. And I think the toughest person to blame when, as a collective, the toughest person to blame for when something goes wrong and you're not prepared is yourself, right? And so taxpayers voted, I guess, or made their voices heard to the point where they didn't want to put money into this system where sirens could have and I guess would have been sounding off at a lot of these camps where people were washed away. So the easier person to blame is the president and the federal government.
Yeah.
And when it comes down to it, if things work the way that I think they should work, there should be states and localities like in Flash Flood Alley that know that every so often this kind of thing happens. You have to kind of be ready for it. And I don't know if that's this whole thing, like if this would have saved lives, but it seems like it would have been better than the word of mouth direction that they ended up going in. So,
1987, it was the same river.
Same river.
Same county.
Same county. And it happened later in the day. It happened in mid-morning, I think around 7, 8, 9 a.m. is when they got it back in 1987. So there was one camp in particular. I was looking this up. The Pot of Gold Ranch near Comfort, Texas. And they had a church camp going at the time, too. Over 300 children were there. and they were able to evacuate, or most of them were able to evacuate back in 87. Several buses and a van departed the camp. Most vehicles crossed safely. One bus and a van from One Baptist Church were swept away at a low water crossing. There were 43 people on that bus. 10 teenagers drowned back in 1987.
12 inches of rain in 45 minutes with that flood, by the way. What can you do about that? Mm-hmm. In 45 minutes, things change in a flash. 12 inches of rain. Now, in West Mobile, it was crazy yesterday, as you showed me those videos, and that was 4 inches of rain in an
hour
and a half.
Yeah,
right.
And we know that floods can happen, but do we have alert fatigue? I think that's another part of this, too. Should they break this down into more serious? I don't know. And I still don't know if people would pay as much attention. Let's go to the phones and talk with Joel in Somerdale. Good morning, Joel.
Hey, good morning. I'll be calm.
We wouldn't know it's you.
My whole biggest thing is nobody's saying nothing about the camp directors. That is the camp director's job. They are in a flood zone area. The notifications and everything's been going out since July the 3rd. So, you got to have a little blame on the camp directors for these camps. They had to know that the possibility of flooding was very coming. So, and for them just to lay low and then let's just see what happens, it wasn't really smart of that to do that.
Well, keep in mind and remember that the one camp director for that camp lost his life trying to save him. And he's been doing that year in and year out, summer in and summer out. And he's probably had so many of these warnings over the years that just haven't
done that place. And then back with the bus actually stalled out. The bus would have went through that flood
back in 87.
Other buses, but the bus flooded out, and that's what caused the bus to get washed over. It was just one of them things, but I don't know. It just is a lot of, I don't know.
Yeah.
I just hate it for the families and the little girls, because I could imagine my little granddaughter at one of them camps, and I'd be devastated just like the rest of everybody is. So maybe God has got his hands on them babies right now and putting his hands on the parents of the kids. So, everybody, we just need to stick together and let's get through what we can. Y'all have a great day.
Thank you, Joel. And that's okay. Like, Joel's emotional. He's a little confused. I mean, we don't know that area, like the back of our hands.
I'll say no one knows it better than the camp directors.
Right, you would think. And again, you did have that flood nearly 30 years ago that took 10 lives at a camp in a different part of that county. But I guess there could be some blame on anytime you have adults supervising your children, somebody else's children, that's a lot of responsibility right there.
Mm-hmm.
So in that way, maybe it's best to be more cautious than not. But these people have been through this summer after summer after summer running this camp, and it was in their judgment, just like it would have been in someone's judgment out on Greelot yesterday, that we're not about to get 4 inches of rain in an hour and a half. No, you are. And so in that way, like you said, a little bit, maybe there is fatigue from all the warnings, and you hear them, you understand them, but you don't process it like it's an imminent danger to you or the kids.
Yeah, and mistakes happen too. And I think even when tragedy results from mistakes, if that's what a lot of this was, just as human beings, we need to be just a little bit more, I don't know.
Forgiving?
Forgiving, yeah, especially when someone lost their life, trying to fix that mistake. It's dark, but Dad and I were talking so much over this weekend, which was just great, being with so much of my family all together. And another reality is everything has become hyper-local, too. There used to be tragedies that would happen, and we wouldn't really have to think about it in our neck of the woods.
Because it didn't affect us.
But when something like this happens, you're just bombarded minute by minute, hour by hour, of something that happened somewhere else, and then everyone has an opinion on it.
Yep.
And when everyone has an opinion, there's going to be a lot of idiots and mean people that have opinions on things too. And I think it's just important that, you know, the people that, you know, like to have a little light in their life and not be dark all the time or going after people all the time, just keep in mind that not everyone is like that. Not everyone is out there trying to knock people down. And it's tough to kind of lose sight of that sometimes.
It's a good point. My brother, who is, of course, in the psychology field, talked to me about that many, many years ago, about when these tragedies happen. And suddenly, it's on your heart, on your mind. Well, it's 800, 2,000 miles away, whatever. Mm-hmm. And yet now the way news, this is years ago, but the way he was just kind of warning me against it, like, you can't take everything so terribly to heart, or you're never going to have a good day.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of text, too. We'll hammer out these texts as we wrap Mobile Mornings up on the way. Also let you know who's on the Jeff Poor Show in about 15 minutes.
Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. That text line is 251-343-0106. Text line 251-343-0106 with Dan and Dalton heading towards the top of the hour in the Jeff Poor Show.
Yeah, Jeff has Baron Coleman coming on in hour number one right after 9:30. State Auditor Andrew Sorrell in hour two, and GOP Chairman for Alabama John Wall joining Jeff in hour number three. You don't want to miss it. Let's get to some of these texts. Florida man says, you hear people blaming this tragedy on no cell phone coverage. Well, if you're responsible for 40 or 50 kids at a summer camp, you have to build in some safety net, which means you have to have a Starlink system to receive these warnings to overcome the no cell phone coverage. Obviously, hindsight is 20/20. But still, Jerry Fort Morgan, as we were talking about, you know, if the responsibility eventually does fall to states for many of the things that the federal government is currently handling, I say, this, I mean, obviously the states have to be up to the task. And there are many states that clearly can't do what they're currently asked to be doing. And but Jerry says, well, at least we have a shark warning down here. And well, I guess up in the Northeast, they're running a lot of people off the beaches because they're using those drones to spot sharks. And what would normally be a nice sunny day, they're ran off the beach because of the drones and the sharks.
Back out of the sand boat at the hot dog stand. So it's causing more people in New Jersey to become fat because they're running from the sharks. And what else do? You go grab a hot dog. And also in the state, as far as the states, we had our own issue with Montgomery during Sally, having to do with
staging of supplies, right?
Yeah.
And they were just, I can't recall that exact story, so I won't try to dive in and get some things
wrong. What we needed down here was up there, and it didn't get down here soon enough.
Quickly enough, yeah. Jerry also said all they would need is an app on their phone, no service. You need Starlink. I have it on my boat. And he says the camp director died in the floodwaters. Yes, he did, trying to save the girls from his camp. Chris says, we all know it would be better if a storm came in during the daytime as opposed to night. However, there's nothing we can do about the timing of storms. A hurricane during the day is much better than a hurricane at night. That's true. It seems like lately all the hurricanes for us have been coming through overnight. I'm trying to remember the last time recently that we had one that came like during the afternoon, and I can't really remember it.
Sally was...
I think Sally and Zeta were both overnight, weren't they?
Yeah, Sally for sure, and Sally overstayed her welcome, if you remember. It was like
we just hung around.
We thought it was going to be a get out in the morning or whatever, and we were just dead wrong.
B-Dark says everybody has weather app on their phone. It's not the government's place to warn people. I think that's also, though, part of this warning fatigue, right? And kind of the chicken little sky is falling. Yep. If you're told over and over that it's flooding, but then you get hit with a once every 50-year one, people aren't going to take it as seriously.
8:59, Jeff Poor on the way next. Talk to you in the morning.